comes from Maine Boats, Homes, and Harbors magazine, covering Maine's boats, harbors, arts, and architecture since 1987, bringing the coast as close as the mailbox, on the web at maineboats.com.
Hi, this is Huggy from Huggy's Hippie Hour, here every Thursday from 10 p.m. until midnight. We will be playing mainly jam band tunes and other groovy stuff that we all dig. Huggy's Hippie Hour and lots of other great programs are here for you on your community radio station, WERU-FM 89.9, Blue Hill, and 99.9 in Bangor, and on the World Wide Web at WERU.org. We love our listeners, so tune in to Huggy's Hippie Hour Thursday nights from 10 p.m. until midnight and check it out. Peace out.
Support for WERU comes from the Grand in Ellsworth, the historic theater and cultural organization located on Main Street in Ellsworth. The Grand is currently fundraising to match a privately funded challenge grant. This goal must be raised by April. More information at grandonline.org, 667-9500.
Just a few seconds before 10 o'clock, and you are tuned to WERU-FM, 89.9 Blue Hill, 99.9 Bangor, and streaming online at WERU.org. Maine Arts Alive with your host Michael Donahue is up next.
Welcome, Maine Arts Alive. I'm Michael Donahue, your host, and Maine Arts Alive is WERU's salute to the literally thousands of artists, arts groups, arts organizations that abound in this beautiful state of ours. And I think of the vast variety of types of activities that are out there. The folks that we have with us today are a unique part of that. And a part which probably is on the minds of most students often, and that is writing. We're talking with the folks from the Maine Writing Project, Kenneth Martin, Ken Martin, who's the associate director of the project. Welcome. Good morning.
Thank you. Good morning.
Yeah. And Gene Plummer, who's director of the Young Authors Camp. Good morning.
Good morning. Glad to be here.
I am particularly interested in that camp. That's kind of what drove this whole program today. But in going on to their website, it's an amazing array of things that are going on. But I'm tempted to put out to both of you a question that immediately came to my mind. And that is that you say in your literature, writing can be taught. And that people should be taught to write, and that good writing is essential to, you didn't say this, but I'll say it, good communications. Having read many term papers, I am very much aware, unfortunately, of even on a college level, an awful lot of people can't write. How are you going about trying to address that issue?
Well, I guess I would answer that in a couple of ways, Michael. Certainly, we do believe that writing can be taught. There is often the perception that writing is a gift and that it some people have it and others don't. But we are dedicated to the understanding that writing can be taught. One of the ways that it's taught, or that students or anyone learns to write, is simply by writing. And so we are strong advocates for time to write in schools. And the other thing that we found that is particularly effective is when teachers themselves write. And it's at the core of the work that we do for teachers to write in front of their students, teachers to write with their students, and to work through those various ways to help students to understand that writing is something not only that they can do, but that has a place and has value in everyone's life.
Let's back up here just a moment. And how old is this group? Your mission is, it's an interesting statement, your mission statement, and your mission is the National Writing Project focuses the knowledge, expertise, and leadership of our nation's educators on sustained efforts to improve writing and learning for all learners. That's a huge mission statement. And I'm wondering, again, when you first started and what you're doing to promote that mission.
Well, the National Writing Project is more than 30 years old. The Maine Writing Project was founded in 1997 at the University of Maine. And for the past 16 or 17 years, we've conducted an institute for about 3 weeks on the Orono campus, at which about 24 teachers gather and read and discuss and learn about writing and about the teaching of writing. So that's the starting and core event. And then over those past years, we've added additional ways to support teachers in their writing, including working in schools with teachers, partnering with them, coaching teachers in classrooms, and providing other professional development pieces. So that's one arm of our activity, and then our work with students would be another arm of our activity.
And the perfect environment for working with those students is the camp. Just give us a little history of the camp and where you are now and what you're trying to do with it. Jean?
Our summer camp, I think camp is a great word, by the way, because I think they're coming to a fun camp. I want it to be fun.
Uh-huh.
And I also find that they learn from each other so beautifully. As a teacher, I went back to my own classroom, a different person from my first summer. It's more that I never realized how important it was for me to write with my students. And that's when I became a better writer. And I think it's a good thing to do so they can emulate what you're doing.
What is about that process that improved you and hopefully improved them?
The fact that I suddenly didn't write as a person by myself. It was kind of like a sharing. And from then on in my classroom, when I gave them an assignment to write, I wrote too, instead of walking around the room, and shared. And the sharing part made my students, I think, better writers.
How do you share? Do you say, well, here's a paragraph I've just written, what do you think?
I always offer, it depends on what we're doing, but if we're writing a story or whatever, what part of the story did you like the most? Read it and we'll tell you what we think about it. And we would share that way. Most of my teaching before I became a member of this program is that I didn't realize how important it was for them to share their writing aloud and that I should write with them. Those are the things I learned, and my teaching changed completely.
And that is the basis to the camp, is that sharing?
Sharing is a very important part of it. Sometimes we have our older students all of a sudden with one student who's younger, and they'll go out in the hall and sit together, and I love to watch them.
The purpose of the camp, and do you have kind of like a mission statement, why you have put this thing together and what it is that you want to achieve? What is it that you want those students to walk out with at the end of 2 weeks or a week or whatever?
Another good question. I hadn't ever thought of that as something to say today, but it's a very important part of it. I encourage students, and I know it works well. I talk to parents about it. They have a booklet they take home with their own work in it, but it's everyone else's work. And I suggest they take it to their teachers, take it to school, take the paper, the program itself to school and share it with everyone. Not because you really want everyone to come next year, but they come to realize that writing is sharing. And sharing your work is not an easy thing to do. I know I couldn't do it when I was young. And so I think that's a very key part of it.
Why is it difficult?
I think it was difficult for me when I was young. I always thought what I wrote wasn't good.
Ah.
And none of my students feel that way anymore, I hope. Or I'm retired now, but I hope they still remember it.
The average student that comes to the camp is currently writing or wants to learn to write, or is it a combination?
Very good question, because we have some who come because their parents have told them to. And
yes.
I can remember having a senior in high school cry as she came in. Her father walked her to the door, and about Wednesday of a week, she began to realize that she liked her writing. And she wrote a beautiful piece for her father at the end.
the father's reaction, do you recall?
Oh, I can remember him not being happy at the beginning and very happy at the end.
Yeah, interesting, interesting. How many students do you normally have in the camp?
It varies very much. The first year was very large. We had, as I told you, 99. Yeah. It was too many. And then it's varied. We've had very small years, particularly since we've lost our funding. And that's another story completely. But I don't know. They vary.
Yeah. Yeah.
This past summer, we had about 40 students.
Last year, was it?
This past year, yep.
Yeah, that's right. It was. We had a lovely booklet.
Let me remind people that the last half hour of our show, you can actually talk with these impressive people about this impressive program. We have our call-in, and just so that you can put that phone number on the desktop in front of you to remember to call when I put the word out, the phone number for local is 469-0500. Again, that's 469-0500. If you're out of the area, there's an 866 number, which is 625-WERU-9378. So that's 866-625-9378. And we'll open the phones in about 20 minutes or so. But if I was out there listening and interested in writing, these are the folks I would want to talk to. Ken, cell phones and all these little gadgets that folks, kids have to work with. I can remember sitting in an office opening on a hallway and watching students talk to each other, who are standing right next to each other, talking to each other with their fingers. How important is writing to future generations who often go no further than LOL?
Well, I think there are two answers to that. One is that most of us do a lot of writing in our daily lives that we don't think of as writing. When we say, do you write, I think most people think, well, I'm not working on a novel or a poem at the moment, but writing notes or keeping lists, writing at work is increasingly important and so forth. So when you mention cell phones and the texting that goes back and forth, that's certainly a kind of writing that students do and a kind of expressing themselves. And there's also the opportunity to do personal writing. We certainly, one of the things that we encourage, I think not just in the young authors camps and student programs, but also in our work with students, is journal writing of some kind, and trying to encourage students to realize that writing is a way of thinking and reflecting about their lives. And it doesn't have to be for publication. It doesn't have to be lengthy, but it's different. Rather than thinking about something, it sometimes is different to sit down and write, however long or however short, about something that's on your mind. So we certainly encourage that.
Isn't there a difference between writing and writing well? And what is it that we're trying to achieve here? Is simply to have them pick up a pen or a pencil and write down their thought? Or ultimately, are you trying to achieve a point where they say, that's not a good sentence, or I want to write that better? I open that up to either of you want to respond.
Well, I think it's a very important question. One of the things that we work with students to overcome is the sense that a first writing should be a polished writing. In other words, one of the things that happens in the classrooms of Maine Writing Project teachers, and I think also at the Young Authors camps, is that we help students to realize that writing is a messy business. And it starts with an initial writing, and that needs to be worked over and developed, often in with others, with the help of others. And that applies whether you are a published author or whether you are just starting out. It is a messy process. It's one that often involves others. So the idea that you might write something, show it to someone, get some feedback, is part of the process of successful writing, but it's not always recognized as the process.
Do teachers of, say, either high school or college level, are teachers obligated, do you think, to teach writing? You go to a chemistry class, and that professor asks them to write a paper. And I've heard many a professor say, I'm not here to teach writing, I'm here to teach chemistry. What would you say to that professor?
Well, certainly in the writing project, we believe that writing is the responsibility of every teacher. Our summer institutes that involve teachers and the other work that we do with teachers is not directed just at English teachers, but intended for teachers across all subjects in the curriculum. And that is because people write in every discipline. Chemists write, historians write, and there's no better example to students of the application of writing in these different disciplines than to see a teacher in one of those disciplines to demonstrate that writing. If history teachers don't write and demonstrate their writing to students, students won't see writing as a part of history, which of course it is very important there. And it's important whether it's even in the subject of math.
So when that young lady, Jean, mm-hmm. came in with her father pushing her, what changed about her concept of what writing was about and what good writing was about? And what at the camp, do you focus on them writing the novel or writing the journal? Or how do you go about addressing the issues that Ken was just talking about?
That's a good question. I saw her for 1 week, which is very difficult. But I saw her improve as she watched other people in the room who, it's pretty 50-50. Some come because the mom or dad thought it was a good idea, and some come because they love their writing already. And I think it's catchy. You know, you go in a room, you meet a person you like, and you find out that they're a writer, and you didn't realize that you can enjoy writing. You know, that's a secret right there that's important.
You don't find it at all intimidating. I'm wondering whether I would. I'm a 12-year-old, and I come in, and there's this 15-year-old who you listen to them, and it's the most beautiful writing you ever heard. And you think, you know, what am I doing here?
That's a really good point. Yeah. I'm not sure. I guess what I would remember the most is that some half, at least 50%, maybe more, that come are true writers already, and I like to think that perhaps, in fact, I know in many cases, it's catchy. In other words, you know, you see someone else and they're loving it, and you suddenly realize you could write something clever too, something beautiful.
Interesting. I like that thought. Mm-hmm. Some nitty gritty here. Where you're registering now for the camp?
Yes, we are.
Where are these camps going to be this summer?
This summer we're going to have our first one at University of Maine, Orono. In the very same time, we will be having one in Benton Elementary. That would be in Benton.
And what's the dates on those?
The date would be for both of them, July 8th to July 12th.
Okay, so it's 1 week? 2 weeks?
It's 1 full week, one mornings.
Okay.
You bring them in the morning and pick them up for lunch.
Oh, okay, half day. All mm-hmm. right, okay. And what's the third site?
The third site is College of the Atlantic in Bar Harbor. And I really look forward to that one. It's a beautiful site. We do a lot of walking and watching the ocean, and it's a beautiful place to write. I write there so well, and I know they do too.
That's a good plug for College of the Atlantic, which is a fascinating institution in and of itself. You were saying before the show that someone can come to you folks and say, I'd like to start a camp, summer camp. Could you tell us a little bit about that process?
Well, that process actually works from two angles. One, if we have a member of the Maine Writing Project, a teacher who has been involved with our organization and wants to start a young authors camp in a particular area, then we certainly support that. And if we had an inquiry from someone in the public about a young authors camp in an area, then we would certainly work to find a member of the Maine Writing Project, a teacher, who would be interested in picking up and and organizing a camp in that area, we'd be receptive to inquiries like that.
So the prerequisites are that they've had to do some studying with you to open a camp?
It's not that someone who's interested in having it, they wouldn't, but we do, these camps are staffed by teachers who are involved with the Maine Writing Project and who are familiar with the approaches that we're supporting.
As a matter of fact, a little later, probably in about a half hour or so, a little later in the show, we're going to have a recording of one of the graduates of the camp, is it?
It's a couple of students, actually, who have worked with Maine Writing Project teachers on their writing.
And hear their work.
Yes.
Short bit, but also you can go onto the internet and find these. Do you know the address off the top of your head?
Well, our website address is mainewritingproject.org.
Okay, and then they can go to the...
And there are links on there to various things, including this.
It's, I listened to it the other day, and it's quite wonderful to hear how... One thing you read or you hear through it is the pride in their work. And I would imagine that somebody who came into that young lady who came into the camp, we're gonna dwell on her for a while.
It's a good idea.
And I wish we had her here.
I do too.
There must have been a sense of pride that developed over that process, mm-hmm. that period of time.
She also met writers. But the best part, we haven't mentioned it, is that when they leave the camp, many of them go with a list of names of those they've met that write, and they start writing back to each other. Mostly the older ones, of course, but I think that's wonderful.
I hope they don't use shortcut text to write back and forth.
They better not.
We've been talking a lot about the camp, but interestingly enough, there's a lot of stuff that you guys are doing. There's a effective practices conferences and institutes and writing centers and graduate studies. Ken, could you start to outline some of that? Tell us what's going on in some of these other areas.
Sure. As I said earlier, one of the arms of the work that we do has to do with professional development for teachers. And as a part of that, each fall, we conduct an effective practices conference. And that's held in Belfast. And it involves about 20 various workshops in a typical conference format. And it's attended by not just Maine Writing Project teachers, but teachers from across Maine. And it's open to the public as well if there are teachers and others who are interested in the various workshops that we offer. We work with various schools, providing workshops, working partnerships that would provide coaching to teachers, and that sort of thing. So that professional development piece is something that is something that we provide to schools, and it's also an opportunity for our teacher members to work with other teachers outside of their own school and district.
When a teacher comes to you, can you tell us what drives them to come to you? I mean, there must be something either special about the teacher, or there must have been something that happened that teacher experienced that says, this isn't my chemistry, but I'd like to move into this area too. Can you verbalize that?
Well, I think there are a couple of ways that people find out about, or the teachers find out about, the Maine Writing Project. One is through various marketing efforts that we do. We put out flyers to schools and so forth about our annual institute and about opportunities for professional development. And quite honestly, our own members are a big part of spreading the word. We have now about 300 Maine Writing Project teacher members.
300?
Yeah.
And most of them are working in the state of Maine?
Yes. Oh, yeah. Almost all of them would be working in schools in the state of Maine in various subject areas. Also, some are administrators, some are literacy coaches, and so forth. So they're involved with education typically in one way or another.
What identifies them as having this.
How do you become a member of the Maine Writing Project?
No, I'm wondering. Well, that too. I'm wondering what they bring from the experience of working with you into their classroom mm-hmm. that they didn't bring into their classroom before.
Yeah. Well, one of the things we've already mentioned, which is the idea of modeling writing and demonstrating writing mm-hmm. and writing, I think that really is at the core of the Maine Writing Project. It's the willingness, it's a teacher's willingness to write themselves and to share their writing with students. So that really is at the core of it. And it also extends beyond that then to the willingness to share, our willingness to share our practice with other teachers, the things that we do in our classroom. We really believe strongly that the best professional development for teachers is provided by other teachers within the context of their own classroom. So we are very strongly dedicated to teachers sharing with others what they do and learning from each other about the most promising practices to be used with students in classrooms.
Both of you have used the word sharing, but throughout my lifetime, I have always heard that being a novelist or a writer is a lonely practice. I picture Ernest Hemingway sitting in a corner with his old typewriter pounding out For Whom the Bell Tolls. Where does the sharing come in versus the single person by the typewriter?
I never had a person in charge of me, meaning my people at school that were in charge of me. Mm-hmm. I never had them complain about the fact that on Fridays, I never had a regular class anymore. It was always write for each other and share before we left each other. We would write, and everyone who could possibly have enough time would share what they wrote. And that was a Friday that was probably the best day of the week for them because they loved writing and they loved sharing. They didn't think you could share. And yet, when someone else did, you could. And it was just wonderful.
But this is highly unusual. I mean, this is not the average Friday for school children.
It was for me.
you were lucky.
And my administrators followed me. Toward the end, I kind of was able to do most anything I wanted to. And they realized, they used to come in. I had a new person come to the school as the assistant, and he started coming in Fridays, which was great. And he wrote with us and shared.
This just, it strikes me, Jean, that this is a highly unusual situation. That most students in the school today, they have their curriculum. They go to the chemistry class and then the English class and then they have gym and so on. So it really is up to that English teacher to capture that moment that he is with them in a way that is perhaps more vital than often we experience in schools today, if I'm making myself clear.
Well, I guess I would certainly agree that sharing, taking the time to share writing with students is less common in schools than it should be. I would go back also and say that I think one of the things that distinguishes the Young Authors Camps is that it is an opportunity for these kids to spend a morning, 3 hours, writing and sharing, to immerse themselves in that for an extended period of time. And that's something that typically is not allotted in most schools. In terms of what the reality is, I think, again, there's a perception that writing is a lonely pursuit, whereas the reality is that for most people who do write and recognize that they write, they realize it's not done singly. I was actually in business for about 20 years before I became a teacher, and I wrote all sorts of memos and reports and so forth, and not one of those went to its final destination without getting feedback from someone else, being revised and being changed. So I think that's an example of how out in the real world, writing really is not a lonely pursuit. It is something that's, there's a social aspect to it. And I actually think that's more true of most novelists than we realize. The Maine Writing Project has been fortunate to work with Maine writer Monica Wood. And from knowing her and seeing how she works, I think that we understand how real writers does involve getting feedback, getting response, and working writing over time.
That idea of sharing in that particular way hadn't come to my mind when you were talking about sharing, and I certainly have experienced that myself, where you have, be it an editor or be it someone else, looking at the piece. And it's interesting the discussions you get into about sometimes just a simple sentence. The concept of good writing is, I take it, a matter of writing the sentence as well as it can be written, or as you as an inspired author might simply like to have that sentence appear, and it may not be correct grammar. How do you address those issues?
Well, we certainly, that really raises a couple of issues. The first one is, too often the perception, again, is that revising writing is a matter of editing, in the sense of getting the punctuation correct, getting the spelling correct, and so forth. And part of what we work towards, again, from the main writing project, is to distinguish editing from the development of writing, which focuses on developing ideas, developing the flow of the text, coherence of structure, and things like that, that are a little bit broader than the editing pieces. So that certainly is part of understanding how writing is best done and best learned. So I think that developing that change in perception is also an important part of the process.
Let's go back to this young lady again. There she sits, mm-hmm. and she hears something in her head that starts the idea of something she's going to write. And she puts that down on a piece of paper, and the sentence, one teacher would come over and say, that sentence is not a full sentence. That's not a good sentence. Another teacher would come and say, well, that's the most beautiful thing I've ever read. Which teacher is correct?
The second one is correct, but you have to add to that a bit. Read yours again, your second one. Your second one, read it to me. Can you?
I don't have it here.
Oh, I see.
No.
Well, I guess,
wish I did. I wish I could say that I could just,
let me just say,
a beautiful sentence.
I changed my correcting after I became a part of this program, and instead of writing down incorrect, I would say, try a different word maybe and see what you think.
Yeah.
It wasn't wrong, but I wonder if it could be better. No more wrong. You don't say that.
Yeah.
Of course, there's some grammatical things that are wrong, but...
Yeah, yeah. It seems to me, in particular today, where spelling and the Internet, we've kind of forgotten that you need to spell things correctly. And if indeed good writing is good communication, by definition, communication, you don't want a, junk in there that says, boy, that wasn't spelled right, and that interrupts my reading of that piece of paper, that sentence. Do you along the way emphasize spelling and punctuation and stuff like this?
Absolutely, of course. But not to the point where you put them down. I guess that's how I feel about it.
The other thing I would say to that is we try and distinguish the parts of the writing process so that we find the right time and circumstances to work with students on particular aspects having to do with conventions. One of the things in terms of getting a piece of writing through its initial stages is to help students to understand that they are the ultimate. They're the owner of the piece. It's their piece to own. And the teacher's response, and hopefully other students' responses as well, are giving them a sense of how it's of what a reader's response is to it, and get them to think themselves about other ways of expressing something. But also, as a part of the full process, having them realize that at some point this has got to be examined and improved in terms of conventions. One of the realities is that if you're looking at the way a word is spelled in an initial draft, that word may not even be there in the final draft.
That's a good point.
So we try and get it far enough along so editing makes sense. But also, most young writers have particular. It's not that they're writing all across the board is weak. It's that they have particular issues, recurring issues with which they need to deal. And the teachers, the best approach is to identify those recurring issues and deal with them, because that will resolve the vast majority of the things that a particular student struggles with.
This fascinating subject of writing, you're listening to WERU Community Radio. And in the next half hour, I am sure you folks out there have questions. The writing is something that we do every day, and I encourage you to give us a call. Our local number is 469-0500. Again, that's 469-0500. Our long-distance call is 1-866-625-9378. And this is indeed WERU-FM 89.9 in Blue Hill, 99.9 in Bangor, and on the internet at WERU.org. Okay, we are also in this last half hour, in a few moments, going to have a recording of one of your graduates, one of your students. Can you tell us a little bit about this, what we're going to hear?
Certainly. I can tell you that the excerpts that we're going to hear are actually from a one of our other student initiatives, which is called the Rural Voices Radio Initiative. And that is a program in which we work with students in various schools through local workshops to generate writings about living in Maine and growing up in Maine. And I believe it was 2005, I believe is the right year, the Maine Writing Project produced a collection of these student writings on a CD audio program, which is also available on the internet, called Our Maine, The Way Life Is. And the excerpt is of two students writing. The first... Did you want me to give the...
Sure.
Well, the first is a writing by John...
It all
John.
Depends on what you're going to give away here.
No, there's okay. No suspense. The first is a writing by a fellow by the name of John Nadeau, who was a high school student, and it's about his family home. And then the... And then there is a second writing as well.
Yeah. And is same person?
No, it's a different student, it's an elementary student, and I cannot recall the name or the title of the piece that follows his.
Well, if you're out there, student, call in and let us know your name. Amy, if we have that tape ready, can we play it? It's about 2.5 minutes. Thank you.
The Story of My House, written and read by John Nadeau.
Back before even I can remember, a Stroud has always lived at 770 Kennedy Highway, and it's kind of a family tradition to add something to this house. My grandfather lived with my grandmother right up the road from my house. To get away from my grandmother, sometimes my grandfather had this crazy idea of starting a little house near the bottom of the hill. He went and got some workers to help him dig a hole in the ground. My grandfather got a cement truck to fill it in, and in no time he had something resembling a house. Good old Pepe built a roof over the square in the ground and had a little place for his own, where he helped raise his son, Michael G. Strout, my father. Well, Pepe and my dad lived there for a while, my grandmother up the road. But sadly, old age was starting to get to my grandfather Pepe. He eventually decided to move back in with his wife and let his son Michael have the old house. Michael was delighted to have such a house all for himself. But sometimes he got lonely, so after a while he started getting serious with his high school sweetheart. They got married, and when I was born, he decided it was time they expanded their little basement house to something a little bigger. My dad got some workers and built a new floor on top of the basement. I got to live in one of the rooms above ground, right next to the new bathroom my dad also added. Years went by, and more children were added until it was kind of a squeeze. So one winter, despite the cold, my dad added another story onto the house. Now my entire family could move out of the ground and live in the sunlight. As I grow older, I hope maybe I can add something to the Strout House to maybe make my kids happier.
The Old Schoolhouse by Anna Tessomenes. The Old Schoolhouse.
There should be a second cut there. Is there another reader?
Yeah, it is there. It's very faint, though.
Okay.
That was an excellent.
If it's not coming
through, but now it's just a home with someone who lives in it. Changed. You would never guess it was a schoolhouse unless you asked, like a caterpillar changing into a butterfly. Now, flowers hanging from the windows, grass neatly mowed, gas tank silver and speckled, bushes growing in front, making the house look beautiful like a colorful monarch butterfly. I can hear the cars running by on the tar that used to be dirt road with horses. More invention comes as they come, like dirt piling on a rug. The old schoolhouse that changed into a home.
Okay. The second one was a little hard to hear. I'm sorry about that. But that first one, it's almost like a history.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember having worked briefly with the Maine Historical Society and projects around oral history. Are there projects around written history as well?
Well, it's kind of an interesting question. You know, the pieces that we just heard go back to our earlier discussion about how good writing is prepared as well. The Rural Voices radio programs are very much about oral history, mm-hmm. and students do write extensively about things that have traditions in their families, things that they have. Learned from parents and that have in that way. In fact, it's very curious to me in the programming how often grandparents are mentioned and how seldom parents are mentioned, which I think is kind of an interesting comment.
Interesting. You find that true?
Yeah. Oh, I just love to add the fact that my student's favorite piece in that entire program was the first piece. I just love that piece.
Yeah. It's one of the things that's interesting about the program is the students are writing for an audio medium, and as a consequence, it does not require attention to spelling, punctuation, and so forth. And yet, when the audio program is complete, we do then move on and produce a written anthology uh-huh. of the work. And what that does is it draws a very clear line between the first phase of writing for content, for structure, for those broader issues, and then isolates the editing function separately. And it's interesting to see how effective that can be in getting students to focus initially on the broad aspects and the content of the piece, and then realizing that, okay, we're moving this into a different medium now because we're going to put this in print, and so now we do need to attend to spelling, punctuation, and so forth. And it really helps them see, I think, how those two functions are equally important in print matter, but how they are also handled, they are handled differently because they're a different aspect of the writing.
I also want to remind folks that about the summer camp. I'm very excited. I would like to take the summer camp myself. I'm probably a little
too old.
Well, maybe so.
You'd love it.
But those of you that want to find out more, please don't hesitate to give us a call. The phone number is 469-0500, 469-0500. Call us. This whole thing about editing and about grammar and punctuation, I think probably puts a barrier up for a lot of folks that have to move through that. Yet, I looked up quotes from famous authors about writing, and there were many of them. It seems that authors love to give little word bites. Many of them focused on the tools or the grammar, and it was which was their tough. For instance, there was Kurt Vonnegut, who wrote that here is a lesson in creative writing. First rule, do not use semicolons. All they do is show you've been to college.
I've heard that.
And then there's, you know, Stephen King is saying the road to hell is paved with adverbs. That there seems to be this, I just want to write. I have something to say that's inside me, and this is the joy of writing, and that's what you work on with this camp. Yet there is this muddy path in front that they have to trug through that's grammar. How do you work that through for an aspiring writer?
I think one thing is not to worry about it while you're first writing, as you pointed out. And then I also think that, of course, we had a lot of pieces that would go into a booklet and we would share it with the whole school. And at that point, they realize that they've got to do more than just the beautiful idea. They've got to make it more perfect. And sometimes that works if they know it's going to be read by someone else. I don't know if that helps or not. We had some great booklets that came out, and students love to have someone read their writing. But you like it to be good.
That's interesting.
I guess I would add also is that the King quote is interesting because he's telling us something not to use. And the related part of that is the importance of verbs. So, for example, taking something like verbs and really attending to that and encouraging students to try different verbs. I mean, the verb really drives a sentence. And so there are some things that you can take in writing and really encourage students to work with, and in their working with those, they really begin to develop a skill with something in particular, like the use of the verb, but also the idea that playing with aspects of a sentence or playing with parts of a piece, working them over, can actually be enjoyable. Mm. And that it's not, that revision isn't drudgery, but that reworking a piece is a constant process of developing new writing, and that energizes that.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah.
There is an additional point that in this particular case, it was, pardon me, Stephen King again. He said, if you don't have time to read, you don't have time or the tools to write. Why does he feel that reading is so important for the writer? It would seem like there's an easy answer to that, but I'm wondering if that's the answer.
Well, I mean, I would definitely agree with that. I think that it's true that the best thing to improve anyone's writing is to read. Part of the struggle that many of our students have is that they may not have been reading enough in their early years as they're growing up.
Is it your responsibility as an organization to work on the reading side as well as the writing side?
Yes, and I think it's true to say that we do work on that. There's we attend and work on literacy in general and support reading in the work that we do, provide professional development to teachers and encourage reading also. I think it is fair to say that writing has sometimes been gotten less attention than reading in schools, and so the writing project has come out of an effort to see that appropriate attention is given to the writing piece. But certainly, writing and reading are closely connected and need to develop in concert with each other.
You're a mother at home, standing at the sink doing the dishes, and your son or daughter comes up to you with something they have written. What role should you play as a parent and as a helping move this young writer forward? Do you say, "Well, that's a good sentence," or do you, what can parents do to help their children?
I have to be first because all three of my daughters had me in class.
Okay.
And I always tried very hard not to, not to make them nervous about it. If you can understand it, if you had your teacher at home with you, you may have experienced that as well. So that was a problem for me. But I think if you don't make it sound like, oh, you're wrong, but explain it differently, they don't mind. They like it. Most students want to know how to make something better when they're writing.
I think there are a couple of things that I would encourage people to do. One is to tell the writer what you like about the writing.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And just feedback to them. It is fairly clear to us that writers benefit more by building on what they do well than by investing time in the things with which they struggle. And I know that probably sounds very strange.
That's right. Yep.
But it is true that students' writing grows when they build on the things that they're doing well, which isn't to say that we shouldn't attend to the things with which they need help, but the real success of writers comes from continuing to build on and expand the things that they do well. The other thing I would encourage that mother to do is to ask questions about the writing. Just simple questions like, where did you get the idea for this? Or, you know, things along that line that will encourage the writer to talk more about what they are writing, not as a response to, not as a kind of corrective response or defense of something, but in the sense of just talking about the writing, where they got the idea, what other aspects they might have been wondering about having to do with it, and that sort of thing.
An additional aspect of all of this you hear all the time is write about what you know, mm-hmm. what you've experienced. And there was a quote from Thoreau, Henry David Thoreau, who said, "How vain it is to sit down to write when you have not stood up to live." Here is this teenager, and we had an example of a teenager, I take it he was probably a teenager in the reading, talking about his parents and grandparents, and so this was part of his experience, and he could write about that. Do you believe that it's true that you need to have experienced life in order to write about life?
I've always heard that you write best about that which you know. I've heard that. I don't know who said that, but it wasn't me. But truly, I think if you really care about what you're writing about, it's probably going to be more meaningful.
So, okay. I was just wondering if that means that the more you experience about the life, the better writer you become. But I don't think that's necessarily a corollary.
I take kind of a balanced approach on this. I do think that there is a problem when students sometimes have a problem. Young people sometimes have a problem when they try to write about something which is unfamiliar to them. And so there is some truth to writing about what you know, but there is also value in going out to learn something about a topic that interests you and developing a knowledge and then being able to write about it. So I think it can go in both ways. But I do think that certainly our capacity to write is developed as our experience and our knowledge grows, and that's partly why reading is important. To read is one way to gain experience, although it may be the experience of others or whatever. But that's one way to acquire the stuff that you can bring to your writing, and also to experience, which doesn't mean you have to, you know, join the Navy and sail around the world, but it is useful for writers and young people generally to take advantage of opportunities. If there's a chance to hike Mount Katahdin, or a chance to work in a neighbor's garden, or whatever it may be. I mean, any kinds of experiences, they don't have to be elaborate and exotic, but to take advantage of whatever experiences may come their way, I think is an opportunity to fill up their collection of things to write about and to bring to their writing.
The process of looking at all those quotes, it was quite interesting. Oftentimes, these writers are very sarcastic about the career of writing. And there was a great one that came from Charles Dickens, and he said, "There are books of which the backs and covers are by far the best parts." I just enjoyed that quote, because oftentimes that's true. You go to the library and you think this is going to be one phenomenal book, and then you go to read it. Generally speaking, what makes an author readable to the general public? Is it catering to those things which the general public, I mean, an average mystery book wants A, B, and C, and it's almost a formula. What takes a writer above all of that?
Well,
have I asked a question that has an answer?
Well, I guess the reason I sort of hesitate is because I think that the answer to that question can be quite different depending on the reader and depending on the individual.
Exactly.
I would say that I think that many people would say that character is really important, that interesting characters it really drives good reading or reading that will interest them.
It's a hard one because you and I know we don't always agree with what we want to read. If you went home and sat down and I sat down, we're probably not reading the same thing. I think we learn in our age that we use what we want to read eventually. Mm-hmm. But in school, they really are given all kinds of reading, so they'll learn what they like.
So in the last few moments that we have here, this is the Maine Writers Project. The website is
MaineWritingProject.org.
The amount of things that you do is fascinating, but the process is, I think, even more fascinating. It's working with those who teach writing, teaching teachers, sharing the idea of how important it is to share. What you've read, hear what others have read, to put yourself in that kind of environment, which belies, I think, you know, we talked about Ernest Hemingway earlier. He said that there is nothing to writing. All you do is sit down at a typewriter and bleed. That there's a lot more to writing than that. And that I wish we had gotten some calls from some parents, because I would love to have heard a parent who's had that experience of a student coming up, or their child coming up to them and demonstrating the fact that they love to write. And how does a parent nurture that? How does a teacher nurture that? And that nurturing, I guess, is the essence of the camp, is it not?
We hope, yes.
That the nurturing is the essence to the programs as a whole. Is that not true?
Yeah, I think that is. I think that's a good word to use. That nurturing is at the heart of it, and to realize that writing and developing writing isn't something that happens necessarily quickly or immediately. There's not necessarily there really aren't shortcuts to it, and the best thing is just to encourage young people to write. And I think one of the things the camps do, and that our teachers do in their own classrooms, is to foster the joy of writing so that it becomes a joyful experience, something that students will enjoy doing so that they will continue to do it in their lives.
Jean, the camp, can you just give us those sites again?
Yes, I'd love to. University of Maine, Orono, July 8th to 12th, grades 3 to 12. Benton Elementary, July 8th to 12th, grades 1 to 12. College of the Atlantic, August 2nd, 12 to 16th, grades 3 to 12.
And do they go to the website to register?
They can do that.
Which again is?
Is MaineWritingProject.org.
That's Maine Writing Project, all one word.
Right.
The camp is... It's three locations this summer. And anyone in the future, next summer, can start a camp if they want to?
Absolutely.
And they call you. You're the director. They would talk with you.
Yep.
How do they go about that?
They can certainly reach me.
Well, there's also on our website, there is contact information.
Okay.
There's a contact us.
Right. Yeah, that's the best way to go.
On the website, and that's a good way to contact us.
And they'll get in touch with us.
Okay, wonderful. This has been just a fascinating half hour. The very fact that all of us write one way or another, it means that this is part of all of our lives. And the Maine Writers Project, I think, is a great way for all of you out there who are interested in writing to become better writers. So thank you for Maine Arts Alive. And thank you to Joel and Amy, who are our double engineers out there. Our music was composed by Walter Gaffney Kessel. This is Maine Arts Alive. Michael Donahue. Thank you, Ken. And thank you, Gene. And good day.